Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. It's Sunday, April 21st, 2024. My name is Buddy Buscemi. I'm one of the co-hosts of GT Beekeeper Radio, and I'm here with my longtime friend, Bill Stagel. Bill, how are you?
Buddy, this seems very surreal to be doing this podcast. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. I hope everybody listening live is doing well, and anybody that listens to this after it's recorded on the other platforms is doing well. But I literally got online and looked today. Our last episode was January 29th of 2023. So what is that, 15 months? Something like that?
15 months. Yes.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
It's pretty crazy. Yeah, pretty crazy. And it seemed like we kind of stopped abruptly. I don't know if you remember, we had part one of what was to be a two-part series on the history of chondros and chondro keepers. Remember that?
I do remember that episode.
Yeah, we had Patrick and Matt on, right? And we talked about a good number of keepers, and we had kind of left it at, we'll get it scheduled here in the next couple of months, and then boy, 15 months later, here we are.
Well, even longer, because this show is not the part two of that episode. So, it's really been a hiatus for us, for sure.
Well, are you doing well?
I am doing well. And I guess a lot of people are probably wondering, well, what exactly did happen after that episode that caused a large break in the show? And I guess you're okay, Bill, if I take a little bit of time to elaborate?
Yeah, why don't you get it started? We don't really have an outline for tonight, but one of the things we wanted to talk about was, you know, why the hiatus. That's kind of why we didn't just have part two, because we, you and I talked a little bit about the past of this show and about the potential future of this show. So, I think, why don't you take a few minutes and just kind of lay on people what's been going on, and then we'll take it from there.
So, almost exactly 6 days from the last episode, my mom had a tragic accident, and as a result of that accident, she was hospitalized and passed away a couple of days later. And Bill, you know, with accidental deaths, you're really not very prepared for what happens when that happens. And so my mom had my stepdad, they have been partners for about 25 years at this point. And so we had to go through the whole process of making sure her estate, everything was good with her estate. And that once that was done, we then had to clean out a house and help my stepdad secure a new place to live that was different from where he had been living. And so that actually became the focus of what I was dealing with most of my free time starting in early February through pretty much late May, middle of June. And then during those months, I had started running again, and I had noticed that I was having some abdominal pain when I would run. And initially I thought it was just because I wasn't exercising regularly and probably had weak abdominal muscles, and just kind of chalked it up to, you know, I'm out of shape and things get sore when you use them that you haven't used for a while. But as my condition improved, I noticed that the pain didn't go away, and that, for instance, if I would go out and do maybe a 12 or 15 mile run, that the pain would last a day or so. So followed up with my doctor, and through the follow-ups, we found out that I had a mass in my abdomen. And then you go through this whole process of additional testing and trying to figure out what the mass is. Is it life-threatening? Is it cancerous? And so those questions really couldn't truly be answered until they actually knew what the mass was. The mass was in a particular place where they couldn't use ultrasound-guided technology to go in and pull a biopsy off of the mass. So I had to find a surgeon that was willing to do the surgery. And then, of course, you know how it is, Bill, with scheduling, you know, all the pre-surgical steps and then scheduling the surgery, how that process goes. And so initially the surgeon had agreed to do the procedure. He seemed to think that, one, that probably A, was not cancerous, and B, that he could approach it laparoscopically, which would mean minimal recovery time for me.
For sure. So big difference.
Big difference, right? So especially with abdominal surgery, it's tough when you have your abdomen operated on. So the scheduled surgery for mid to late September of last year. And so the good news is that when they went in and removed everything, the pathology report showed everything was benign and was most likely what I had was related to a previous trauma to my abdomen. The downside was is that they could not reach it the way they had initially intended to do so. And as a result, they had to essentially cut me open from chest to pubic bone. That just took a really long time. So, and of course that takes just a long time to recover. So, and also where the mass was a particular part of the body that they wanted to watch very carefully because it suspended things, and they were worried that maybe the integrity of that ligament may be impacted. So it was a very slow and cautious recovery. And so those two things for me have taken up most of, at least for me personally, that's the reason I personally wasn't really able to commit to pulling shows off and getting some more content out there to the people that like to listen to our show. And so
you haven't even gotten to the fact, you know, that you had your oldest son go out of state, start college, you know, you got,
yeah.
And again, that's, it's time consuming. It's, you know, there's some stress associated with that, the whole scenario.
Right. Yes. A lot of stress. Yeah, that is a good point. So, yeah, my oldest son is now, 45 minutes north of you, Bill, an hour maybe north of you in Texas, attending the college. So in the midst of trying to figure out what was going on with my health, we also moved my oldest son to college so he can hopefully have a career path once he graduates college. So that stress as well. So yeah, it was a lot of stuff going on. So obviously, you know, Bill and I have talked about this, that, you know, we've never really had kept a strict schedule with show content and those type of things. So it just was really something for me personally that I felt we could just, I could just let kind of slip and fall down the list of priorities and have a conversation with you, Bill, at a later date to decide how we could move forward or if we should move forward and those type of things. But I will say, Bill, just, you know, talk about the stress of moving Victor, you know, halfway across the country. You know, I'm sure you picked up on this. Well, we got to see each other in August, right? We got to spend a little time together in August and got a chance to meet Victor and Rocco and my wife, Donna. But, you know, having you, Bill, someone that we know, at least close by if there was an issue with Victor, I know put me at ease and also help put my wife at ease a bit as well. So, and we're happy that so far we, knock on wood, we have not had to use you yet for a resource.
I kind of figured no news was good news. You know, like I didn't get any 2 a.m. texts or calls from Victor. So I figured no news was good news. just meeting him and knowing your family, I wasn't real worried about him other than maybe wanting a home-cooked meal or some laundry done or something like that, you know.
Yes. Because he likes to eat.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, he's a big kid, and he probably burns about 20,000 calories a day, if I had to guess, knowing his water polo workout regimen and all that and his age. And yeah, he's a beast. Well, kind of like we talked about, it's not like we were pumping these things out every month anyway. I think when we look back prior to 2023, what were we putting out? A year, maybe every quarter we put out an episode.
Yeah, that's about right. That's about right.
So, yeah, so
we've always taken the approach of no pressure on us or guests, and just try to, you know, put our heads together occasionally and select someone we thought would be on the it would be good to have on the show or a topic that was timely that would be good to address. So that's always been our approach, and I think that probably
has helped us, I guess. Yeah, it's always been content and quality driven as opposed to schedule or quantity driven, right? I mean, we did the episodes when we thought there was something really, you know, worthwhile to talk about or somebody worthwhile to talk about, something new. Never any regrets about the frequency which we did the show. Everything that you just talked about, I obviously knew. I knew it was the reason for the pause. I had my own issues on my end. I had some health problems that I was going through as well. And kind of like we talked about earlier in the week, there have been a lot of other formats and other platforms that have popped up in the last 12 months. As you know, and a lot of our listeners know, I'm a regular co-host every Tuesday night with MJ's All Entries Tuesdays with Marshall Mendez. And compared to what we put out, once a week is a lot. I mean, that's a lot. And in addition to other podcasts that I'm asked to do, I'm happy to, you know, to do those for people that are typically do non-Green Tree podcasts but are interested in green trees and want to get their listeners interested in green trees. I enjoy doing that for the same reason that we started GTP Keeper Radio over a decade ago, you know. But the bottom line is it's busy and it's time-consuming. And to be quite honest, you know, the young kids make fun of our Blog Talk Radio platform, you know. You know, they you know, listen, we were the first, but there are certainly platforms out there, video platforms and other people that really know what they're doing in the podcasting and broadcasting business that produce products much superior to ours, right? So,
correct.
All those reasons, you know, I mean, I think we just kind of owe the people that are loyal listeners. And, you know, we've got more than a handful, and a lot of them have been listening to the show from the beginning. You know, I felt like we owed them a little bit of an explanation as to why the pause. I have not spoken about any of what we just talked about to anybody at all, just that, you know, we needed some time. We needed a pause. And so,
right.
You know, I think it was important for us to at least get what's been going on for the last year or so kind of out there. So,
yeah, I agree. And, you know, Bill, I had to have that difficult conversation with you back in the summer about what was going on with my health and the unknowns. And, you know, in my mind, you know, I had to be prepared for, you know, what if this is something that is going to require a long-term battle? You know, what are my next steps for essentially the hobby that I've had since a small child? Do I try to, you know, move forward and it, or scale back or completely step away? So there was a lot of, you know, just thoughts in my mind about the next steps and what ifs and how to move forward and those type of things. We both work in the medical field. We know these things are going to happen eventually to all of us. You and I are no longer the 20 and 30 year olds anymore. And, you know, health becomes more of a concern as we age. And even though sometimes we may choose not to maybe acknowledge that fact, or we can try to pretend that it's not going to be a major issue for us, but that's not always the reality that we have or that we face.
Yeah, and then, you know, in the interim, now your diagnosis and things were much more stable, you know, it was a long 3-4 months, whatever it took. But by the time you got that first doctor visit to where, you know, things were looking much more optimistic. But in the interim, we have, you know, Brian Barczyk dying of pancreatic cancer in less than a year.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And stuff like that certainly doesn't help, you know, the mindset of.
Correct.
You know, taking care of green trees and hosting a GT Keeper radio, all that seems to just kind of look like, you know, pittance compared to what's really important in life, you know?
Correct.
Well, I'm glad we kind of got that out of the way, under our belt, so to speak. It still really doesn't answer the question of, you know, do we go on? Do we continue on?
Right.
And I wish I had a clear-cut answer about if this was going to be the last one. We're going to do part two of the historical Chondro Keepers. I have a feeling we will.
Right.
You know, but for the other reasons that I mentioned, you know, the other platforms out there, the other people that are kind of taking over, you know, and there's just a lot of platforms out there now to get information to existing keepers, new keepers, the stuff that when we decided that we were going to get involved wasn't out there. So I think it's still a to be continued story.
But yeah, I agree. I don't think it's, you know, something that we could say definitely going to end tonight's the last episode. And I really think that our tempo and pace from previous years have kind of set us up for, you know, we can do an episode whenever we feel like we want to do an episode. And I think that's something that's how I, you know, I think that's for me right now the best approach. And I can't speak for you, Bill, but I know that's how I feel right now. I mean, we had a discussion earlier in the year too about, you know, well, maybe we just kind of, you know, maybe it's time for the era to be over and we kind of quietly walk away and just look back with a little bit of pride about what we did and, you know, kind of hope that we are, if we were to do that, that, you know, the hobby is maybe a better place for some of the things we have done and some of the things we have talked about and maybe put smiles on people's faces or encourage people to step up and challenge themselves in a way that they didn't think maybe they were ready to do.
Yeah, and I don't feel the urgency that I did a few years ago about really getting information out, you know,
right.
Whether something big breaking was happening, you know, felt like we had to let people know about it. You know, just with these other platforms that are out there now, I know of two podcasts that happen every week that are focused on either strictly green tree pythons or arboreal species that focus heavily on green tree pythons. So,
right.
You know, a community our size and in a community that is growing but is still, you know, relatively small, all things considered, I don't feel the urgency to get information out, whether it's clutches that are hatching or accomplishments, people that have been working on projects for years, you know, finally overcome the hurdles, or whether it's getting up-to-date husbandry information or caging or whatever it is. I don't feel like, you know, we have to be the ones that are burdened with that information between social media and these other platforms. You know, that stuff is now taken care of pretty well, I think. But having said
Agreed.
That, I still like the flexibility of whether it's once a year or twice a year. You know, none of these platforms are going to be able to have the, like just the last episode we did, right? The history. I mean, none of these guys have been in it anywhere near a fraction of the time that you've been in it. And so to be able to have even just like a historical perspective of green trees, which is really important to the vast members of this community, you know, I think we would still have a lot of stuff to offer, you know, to listeners that we experienced and you in particular have experienced firsthand.
Sure. Absolutely.
So I think we can agree. We'll just kind of leave it open. And what happens happens, and with really no pressure to move forward.
And that's exactly how I would like to move forward. You know, I think that's the best way, honestly. You know, just because of what we have both going on in our lives, and, you know, we have, I mean, there's, like you had mentioned, there's podcasts that are specific towards arboreals and chondros, and plus we still have the original, the show that kind of was the inspiration for this show. You still have Morelia Python Radio and all the content that they offer and all their, I guess, I don't know if I'd call them sub-shows or shows that they are affiliated with that produce regular content. I mean, it's just... everything's out there, and it's kind of amazing. I mean, I was on NPR maybe a month ago, and we were just talking about how when I really was trying to read pythons for the first time in the very early 90s, that there was a couple of books, maybe three or four books, maybe five if I was lucky, and then also commented that, and of course they all contradicted each other, which was true. So
yeah.
Just the fact that you can now, be driving to the grocery store and listening to a podcast about, how to keep green tree pythons, how people are breeding green tree pythons or any other species, really. It is pretty amazing that content is readily available to us at all times. I recently did a backpacking trip not long ago, and I actually downloaded a couple of reptile-specific podcasts, and the one I listened to was the Rico Water episode of Morelia Python Radio. Before I go to bed, I like to kind of listen to something to kind of help me relax a little bit before I fall asleep. And so it was fun to revisit that episode.
Man, that was a long time ago, wasn't it?
It was. And in some ways, it doesn't feel like it was that long ago, but it was a long time ago.
Yeah, and then I think about the episodes that, we've done. I mean, we didn't have Rico on, but we've had Trooper on.
Right.
And just
Greg Maxwell.
Greg and... Yeah, Greg, Greg is, he's still kicking. He's still doing the podcast, the recent podcast, even though he's technically a ball python guy now. People are still intrigued by Greg Maxwell and both of the podcasts that I referred to just a couple of minutes ago. They both have had Greg on as guests, and, he's still spreading the love, and I'm really glad to see that.
Me too. I'm glad he has stepped back into the reptile world, regardless of what he's keeping. I'm just happy that he's back, and the passion, I guess, for keeping the animals is still alive within him.
Absolutely. Well, why don't we, I can't even remember. I think have we maybe done one episode where it was just you and me in the past
never.
Decade?
This is the first time we've never had a guest.
Really? I thought there was one other that we didn't, but this is the first time?
Oh, what? Maybe it was post-pandemic. Maybe that was one that we didn't have a guest.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe there was one.
Yeah, maybe that was one.
Seems really weird to do this podcast without a guest, because let's be honest, the guests of our shows have been by far the best part. And we have had some incredible guests on this show. And I'm patting you on the back because that is your responsibility, is to line up the guests. And, man, there have been some epic episodes.
We've had some great guests. I will mention this too, Bill. I did the Condro Barroom podcast a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Yep.
And they had one of the questions they asked me on the show was, what's up with your opening music? And I'm not sure where they were going with their question, but I think explain to them that, and maybe people don't know this because I don't think we have maybe mentioned it recently, but that music that's Marshall Mendez playing that guitar riff for us. I asked him if he had anything he could do for us so we could kind of have a little bit of music for an intro, for an opening. And, Marshall being Marshall and the good guy that he is, sent us right over a guitar riff. So that music that you hear is a Condro breeder keeper. That's them playing that music for us, which I think is pretty, now that I think about it, I never really put too much thought into it, but I think it's pretty cool that we have that music from a Condro person.
Yeah.
And the legendary controversy.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like I mentioned earlier, I'm on every week, every Tuesday with Marshall. And I think, in fact, you and I were on MJ's podcast together, right? And
correct.
We did bring up the fact that that Marshall was responsible for that music. So I'm glad those guys recognize good taste when they hear it.
Me too. Me too. And I think, you know, that, I don't know, when you go to these other shows, and even Morelia Python Radio is much different. I hadn't been on an episode for them in probably like 6 or 7 years. So even their whole opening and that all has obviously evolved, which I knew because I regularly listen to their shows. I'll find an episode and we'll take some time to listen to it. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, but not only that, but everything's video now. I think GT Keeper Radio might be the only blog talk show left out there. I mean, everything else is video.
Right.
I mean, everything has evolved and changed except for us.
Right. And we did have that conversation several years ago when we had talked about, you know, do you think we should change our formatting to a more of a video content type thing? But I don't know. I'm personally not that comfortable to do that on a regular basis. I don't know how you feel about that, but I do like the fact that without having a video feed, I can kind of be anywhere I want to be in my house or outside and not worried about, you know, the background looks cinematic. If we were showing a video today, you'd see much the shoe rack behind me tonight, which I may not want. You know, people may not want to see a shoe rack when they want to watch a show about watch a podcast about green tree pythons and those type of things. So,
well, I've gotten used to it because, you know, the podcast that I am on Tuesdays is video, and every podcast I've asked to be a guest a part of in the last 5 years has been video. Now you can listen to it on non-video platforms, but all of this stuff is I think, you know, YouTube, a lot of it's YouTube generated video. And so I've gotten kind of used to that, but yeah, it is. It's another step. It's more preparation, right? To do the video. And, you know, we've always said that our content was more important than the format anyway. So if people want to listen, they can listen. You know, you get what you pay for, right?
Right. And I don't know about you, Bill, but
no sponsors that people have to, you know, listen to, you know.
Right.
We have no content that we're obliged to cover. We just throw it out there, and if people want to listen to it, then they can listen to it, and if they don't, they don't.
Correct. Yep. I was going to comment on, but I don't know. I can't speak for you, but I know that my habits are I will occasionally watch a YouTube video interview, but the majority of the podcasts that do have the video content as a part of their platform, I usually wind up listening to them in just audio, just because of it's kind of a, you know, I'm listening, doing other things, and I want to listen to something, and, you know, but I don't have time to sit down and take in the video content for a couple hours. I don't have that much free time, unfortunately, but I do, you know, when I'm driving or when I'm doing some chores, I can, you know, pop in the earbuds and listen to content.
I'm absolutely 100% the same way. I will usually pop up on my phone the video content because occasionally I'll glance down, maybe take a look, or maybe there's something that's applicable to video. But 90% of the time, I'm out in the snake building, I'm working out there, or I'm in the car. when I'm listening to podcasts. Well, do you think maybe one of the things that we wanted to talk about was maybe what's up in our collection and what we've been doing the last 15 months?
You go first.
You want it? Well, I can start. We can kind of go back and forth.
Okay.
I've had, so far, a pretty good year. My breeding season is pretty straightforward as far as, you know, when I pair and when I expect to have eggs, and this year has followed suit from the last several. Looks like I'm going to have 4 clutches this year, possibly up to 6. I still have 2 females that are pairing, but this is getting pretty late in the window for me, and if they haven't done something here in the next month, then I'll stop pairing them until later this year, later this fall, winter, which seems to be the time period I have the most success pairing and then getting females to go on to ovulate and lay eggs. So right now I'm looking at 4 clutches. In fact, the first clutch of my year started pipping today. That's always exciting,
oh, nice.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I never get tired of seeing that. And actually, this is day 46 for me, which is probably the earliest I've ever had a clutch pip on day 46. Very, very consistent at day 49 or day 50. I can think of the number of clutches I've produced in the last 5 years that haven't been day 49, 50, or 51. I could probably name them on one hand. But this was the earliest I've had a day 46. Have you had them pip that early?
I believe my first condor clutch hatched pipped a couple days earlier than expected, and then everything else has kind of been. It might have been like day 47 or 48, as opposed to 50, 51. Of course, it was my first condor clutch, so I was, you know, no historical data to go off of or anything like that. So I was just basing it on, you know, incubator temperatures and what everyone was kind of telling me what to expect, those type of situations. And then after I hatched the first clutch, I actually was able to borrow a NIST calibrated thermostat and actually tweak my incubator to exactly what I thought the temperature should have been. And so then for the longest time, day 50, 51 would have been a majority of my clutches, maybe an occasional day 52 or day 49.
And so that's 7.5, is that kind of what you're shooting for in the incubator temperature?
So at that date, it was 87.8, and then I've since dropped everything back, dropped stuff down to 86.5, and I'm going day 54, 55 now.
Okay, well, yeah, that makes sense. And I'm still at 87.5.
Gotcha. Was it a big clutch?
It was 15 eggs, yeah, and they all look good. Okay. I had five of the 15 pip today.
Nice.
Yeah, all the eggs look good. So we'll next couple days, you know, will be really the, as we know, you know, the next couple days will really show what's going on. And I don't really count anything as golden until not only do they pip, but they're out and they perch, because I've just seen so many that either pip and crawl halfway out and die halfway out of the egg. That's the most frustrating thing, hatching green trees, that I experience. The ones that pip and crawl halfway out of the egg and then die. That's very, very frustrating. So I don't even really, I mean, I love to see them pip, but until they perch, I don't count my condors before they hatch.
That's it. Absolutely. Value of experience speaking right there.
That's clutch number one. You know, every clutch that I have this year is going to be first time. So in other words, I have no repeat pairings. I have repeat animals, but no repeat pairings. And I bred eight females this year, and really only a couple of them were true repeat sire to dam pairings. And it looks like none of the repeats are going to go this year, which is unusual, right? Hmm. You go, oh, that's your proven pairs. Those are going to be reliable ones. Even my Jaeger Biscuit, which is the most reliable pair I've ever worked with, looks like she's not going to go. I think the mistake I made is I actually rested her last year. I thought I was going to give her a break and rest her, and she'd be good to go and ready to go this year. And despite multiple locks, just like they do, you know, every time I do breed them, very reliable in their locks, she just does not appear like she's going to produce eggs this year, which was a surprise. Jaeger did produce a clutch from another female that's due to hatch in 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks that clutch is due, but he didn't get it done with Biscuit this year, which is a little disappointing, but is what it is, right?
Yeah, maybe Jaeger's decided to retire. Gave her a break. She realized how nice life could be without making eggs.
Yeah, maybe slowing down. He only sires one clutch and, you know, not three.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All good things come to an end.
Yeah, they sure do.
So that was good news today, obviously. Clutch number two and clutch number three were laid on the same day. I just mentioned Jaeger bred to a female this year that I named Ocho. And I named her Ocho because she was the eighth female that paired for me this year. And she is not a new or young female. She's 12 years old. Well, I'll say she is. She was, because I lost her after she laid.
Oh, no.
And I wasn't surprised. She was a 12-year-old female that I actually got from Chris Wolf. Do you remember that name?
Yeah.
That name, Chris Wolf from Florida.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Old school. Yeah. Old school contract guy. He had narrowed his collection down significantly. And he was just left with a couple of chondros that he just decided that he needed to get out of. And so I agreed to take them. They were, the 12-year-old female was the youngest. I also got a 16-year-old male that I agreed to take. The male never established here. I got him here. He never ate, and he just eventually went on to pass. The 12-year-old female established very well. I kept her here for a year, and then I bred her this season, and she did well, and she, Jaeger, and she produced a clutch of 12 eggs, and then she, towards the end, before she laid, she was not looking well. They obviously all go off food and lose weight before they lay, but she never just really looked good. I was actually surprised that she laid a pretty decent fertile clutch. But she just never went back on feed, never established, and she just eventually died, which is not, I was not completely surprised by. But anyway, right. I've got her in the incubator, and, you know, Jaeger is such a wild card, and breeding to a new female, obviously no idea what they're going to produce. She was a pretty nondescript green animal. She was a red Neo. Trying to even remember who produced her, but she was a blue designer line outcross to a Jaya Pura locality type. But, you know, that's pretty much exactly how Jaeger produced the sickness. You know, so
right.
Who knows what's going to become of those animals. So we'll see. So that was clutch number two, and clutch number three laid on the exact same day. And that is actually been my most anticipated clutch, other than maybe when the sickness produced. So this is a really, really a clutch I'm really stoked about. 14 eggs, they all look great. And that was a John Irby male called Freight Train that bred to the first female offspring of the sickness, who I call Outbreak. And they're both highly melanistic. And Freight Train produced two clutches of Neos last year that just phenotypically were insane. So super stoked about that clutch.
Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah, I can't wait for that one. And then the last clutch that I have this year is a female that I have bred before. She's in her egg box right now, so she's due to lay within the next few days. And she is Cyanosis, and she's the granddaughter of Blue Deuce.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah. You remember, Blue Deuce. The second chondro I ever acquired was an animal from Christian Stewart of the barn, and it was a subadult that he produced from Blue Deuce, and it was, in fact, I bought that animal in an auction that Christian put up for Rico when he was diagnosed with brain cancer. So obviously that animal, Green Deuce, who I no longer have, lost her several years ago. But Cyanosis was one of her offspring. And so because of all of those reasons, you know, it's a special lineage for me to have that animal produce her second clutch. So really, you know, it's so funny how all these things, everyone seems to be special, right? Like, oh, this one's special because of this. This one's special because of that. And, you know, that's not just bullshit I'm making up. You know, seems like every single one of these animals has a special reason, relationship to me, especially the ones that I produced, right? When you produce an animal that we produce, you know that feeling, right?
That's a great feeling.
Yeah, it is.
I think I mean, producing animals is one thing, but when you have animals that you produce that are now producing, that's the next level, both, in several ways, not even literally, but just contextually, right?
Yeah, I try not to take like a lot of pride in this because it's such a humbling game, you know, that we're playing. But when I have an animal that produces that I produced, or just as importantly, somebody else produces an animal from an animal that I produced, I take a lot of pride in that. That to me, that's like, man, that's, you know, it is what it is. I'm very proud of it.
And you should be. We say this all the time, the snakes do the hard work, but there's a lot of emotional involvement with these animals. I guess some people maybe don't feel that way, but I do. I feel like I'm sure you're the same way. We put a lot of time invested, and resources that are invested, and people, I guess, often only focus on, they only see the highlights of keeping these animals, which is, somebody hatched a chondro, or they're selling, or they look at the price for chondros being sold. They're not, when you only look at that little aspect, that small aspect of that, you're missing the entire picture of what everything happened previous to all those, all the events that had to occur, everything that had to work out properly. And so it's easy to overlook that accomplishment. You should feel, there should be some pride. I mean, you've been around long enough, Bill. You've seen plenty of people who come in and purchase some snakes and they're out they're out in a year or two. They've never even gotten their snakes to the breeding age, and they're for sale for whatever reason, right?
Yeah.
So most people don't even make it to raising an animal to maturity and then, you know, having the taking the time and being able to produce an animal.
Yeah, it's, you know, like you just said, there are so many links in the chain that can be broken. All it takes is one link, you know, to be broken, and then, you know, it's lost. You know, the animal's lost, or the clutch is lost, or, you know, there's just so many things that can happen along that. And for, you know, for a female green tree, hell, you know, you got to keep it alive for 5 years minimum.
Right.
And then it's got to, like you said, they do the work, but man, it just seems like you're so heavily invested in it.
Right.
That it does, like it, you know, it does seem like it's your piece of work, you know, it's like they're the canvas and you're the painter, and, you know, it's just, I kind of could understand what an artist feels like when he steps away from the palette, you know, and says, all right, I'm done. It's over. And then you put the next piece of canvas up.
Right. And so, and when you think about, you know, a female, you know, taking 5 years for a female to mature to breed, think of everything, you know, take today, April 21st, 2024, and just look back 5 years.
Yeah.
And think about everything that's happened in personally in your life and how your life has changed and taken a different path possibly. And, you know, but here it is, you know, 5 years is what it takes to get that snake to maturity. And, you know, so that snake has to, you know, grow, but it also has to endure everything that's going on in the keeper's life as well.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people don't make it there.
That's a great point, because in those 5 years, you know, there have certainly been ups and downs in my life, right? I mean,
right.
Good, bad days, good years, bad years. But the green trees have always been pretty damn consistent, and I've taken pretty damn good care of them, you know, over that time period.
Right.
Right.
And I don't know about you, Bill, but for me, I am now thinking about how many more, you know, if I, you know, hatch green tree pythons out this year, right? Hold animals back, and, you know, thinking about, wow, in 5 years I'll be this old, and then what'll be another 5 years for those animals if I produce these animals in 5 years? And you start thinking about those things, you know, the reality is you know, the clock isn't infinite.
Well,
and,
you know,
how many more 5 years are there going to be for, you know, people like me that have been doing it for a long time? And, you know, I'm not saying that my clock's ready to end tomorrow, but, you know, there is an end eventually. And it's closer than my end is closer than my beginning.
Yeah. And me too, for sure. And I get asked all the time, you know, why do you sell so many of your green trees? You know, what you only held back, you know, blank amount? Well, it's not because I need the money. It's because I look at those animals and I go, okay, it's 2024. It's going to be 2029. You know, and although I love to have a sizable collection and I love to have animals to look at, you know, there's just no reason for me to keep a bunch of animals back right now, because I know in 5 years, I'm just not going to be producing or breeding a significant number of green trees, if any, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just, It's just a stage of where you are in your keeping and your age and, you know, what the future holds for you. And so it just is what it is. But having said
very
that,
true.
You know, having said that right now, you know, I feel like I'm kind of in the prime, you know, maybe
right.
Kick back a couple of years ago, you know, right now is kind of my, I feel like I'm kind of in the, my production prime, as you would say.
And Bill, do you think being where you are in your life now has played a significant role in the successes that you're having with your collection? Do you think maybe if this was 30 years ago, 20 years ago, that things that would have been different, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the fact that I can dedicate really all of my time, you know, to doing this makes a huge difference, right? I mean, mm-hmm. if I was in a big clinical practice, you know, like I was 10 years ago, there's no way I could have the success. And I don't see how people like Patrick Holmes do it, who's going to produce probably as many green trees as I do this year and who did as many as I did last year. You know, that guy's got a full-time job and works with, you know, many more species than I do. So
right.
To answer your question, there's no doubt in my mind that if I was doing this under different circumstances in a different time period, I wouldn't have the success that I'm having now.
Right.
You fall under that category as well. What's the largest number of animals that you produced in a calendar year that you can recall?
Ooh.
I mean, just off the top of your head.
Green tree pythons?
Python.
I did maybe... Yeah, I think it was 2017, and maybe did maybe in the 40s, and then 2018 was over 50, and that's been the biggest. And you know, so that, and then having had that experience in 18, kind of kind of having that experience of having, I mean, to me, that was a large number of babies and, you know, working full time and you're talking 6 years ago, you know, preteens, having, you know, middle schoolers in the house, being active. And it was a challenge to establish and maintain and you know, do everything the right way. And, you know, so now I'm kind of at that point where, you know, if I can get, you know, two or three clutches a year, I'm pretty happy with that for an output for green tree python. So I may attempt more breeding, but, you know, that's kind of always my goal right now. That's manageable for me with where I am, you know, working full time and those type of things. But, I'm a couple of years away from, you know, being an empty nester. So that may change, but, you know, again, you know, that's going to put me, you know, 2 years closer to 60, which put me close. I'll be 58 in a couple of years. So, you know, who knows where my mind will be with where I want to go with continuing breeding and at what level to continue the breeding. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, So you may actually, I mean, your production could pick up in the next, you know, in the next 5 years.
It could. Don't know if I'm planning on it, but it could.
Well, yeah, I won't let your life get too far ahead of you, but you're gonna have more flexibility.
Right. I agree. So looking forward to that. There's also some other things in my life I'd like to get back to doing that I don't do as much anymore. So those things to take into consideration as well.
Yeah, it can't be completely about the chondros.
Oh no. I mean, I love bike riding. And I'm just that type of person where if I get on my bike at 7 o'clock in the morning, I can easily not come home till 3 or 4 in the afternoon, easily. But you know, the reality of that happening now, there was a time in my life where that could happen. But just with everything in my life right now, there's no way that could happen. And one of the reasons I'm trying to convince myself I like to run is because I feel I can go and do, you know, a 90-minute run and feel that, you know, have that physical exhaustion feeling that I do coming back from a 3 or 4 hour bike ride. So, but yeah, so there's, well, I would love to jump back into cycling a little bit more frequently.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to see you do all of that as well. Well, speaking of your production, what have you got going on now? What's been going on this last year?
Last year, you know, Bill, we had got that joint clutch together. That was very exciting.
Yes, that was very exciting, and that obviously was, you know, one of my very favorite clutches and projects to do. You're the only person I've ever done a joint like Green Tree project with.
Really?
I think so.
Wow.
I think that's awesome.
I appreciate the compliment.
It is a compliment because you're only one of about 3 people I can think of that I would even, imagine the doing that for so many reasons.
Right. And then late last, so I had a couple of smaller clutches last year, but the neonates never established, And then later in the last fall, September fall, right while I was preparing for surgery and all that great stuff, I had 2 clutches of Diamond Python's Hatch, which are, you know, fortunately different than Green Tree Python Babies to establish, which I was very happy that even though they had hatched during a time that it was physically challenging for me to move and walk, that, you know, they don't require what a Green Tree Python does to establish. And then, which brought us back into the breeding season for chondros. And I did 4 pairings, and 3 of which were successful. I tried to pair the male that you have here from a sickness offspring. He didn't take this year.
Yeah.
I think that was on me. He actually went off feed in the middle of the summer last year. And I just kind of assumed that he would continue being off feed, but then a couple months later when it was time to do pairings, he was ready to start eating again. So I think that window of opportunity maybe had closed. So this year, whenever he decides he is no longer going to eat, that he will be paired. And then we will hopefully have another clutch from him next year. I have a male here, and I think he was hatched in 2018, and he's called Base Hugger because he was one of those. He was a chondro. He's kind of mellowed out a little bit since he's been breeding, which I'm happy about. But he was one of these chondros where he would just strike at your face. Like, you, even if you put your hand in the enclosure, he would just be locked on your face and would ignore your hand and strike at your face. So that's why I call him Face Hugger. But he's an amazing looking chondro. He's a blue snake with yellow diamonds and a little bit of black in, but he, I mean, even, you know, I still look at him to this day and go, wow, I can't believe I produced an animal of that caliber. And so decided that, you know, just looking at this animal and looking at other animals I've had that I've kind of waited for pairings and maybe something bad has happened to them, I decided to just go all in this year, and he decided to put in with three different females. And
awesome.
So and every female has produced a clutch. One clutch hatched maybe a month ago. I had a first clutch was like 12 eggs. A couple of them were kind of wonky looking. Eight or nine went the distance, and after everything hatched, I have six very nice neos from that pairing. I have another small clutch of nine eggs that are due to hatch about this time next week.
Okay.
And then the final pairing, the female laid, I believe, 18 eggs, and as of today, I have 17, and they probably are about 3 or 4 weeks away from hatching.
Outstanding.
And then that's it. Now, you know, my window is closed, unless, of course, if I try to feed tomorrow night and Nasiria decides that he's not going to eat, then there will be a spring pairing. So but that's pretty much it for me for the breeding season for this year. And just thinking about next year, I'm counting. Next year I'll have 10 females that I could pair.
That's amazing.
I'm
absolutely
not going to pair
amazing.
That many.
Yeah,
but
yeah. No,
I need to kind of, I'd like to get a clutch or two from your male next year. Do a one or two pairings with Nyseria. I have the Remedy here, who bred a couple seasons ago, and the female slugged out, and I didn't even try him this year. And then I have a male and a female from. I'm still trying to figure out this if this hypomelanistic thing is real or not. So
yeah,
I have a female from the first clutch, and now I have a male from the second clutch. So I'm going to try to pair them. And then I think I'm going to stop there.
And I still have the male that you sent me down here.
Okay, good.
Who looks awesome.
Good.
He's phenomenal. Beautiful animal. But I haven't really done anything with him. Just enjoying him.
Right. And then I have, I have a couple males that are here, and they're a little bit older, 12, 13, 14 years old. And, you know, I haven't really tried to, breed them in 4 or 5 or 6 years. So they're just here hanging out and, don't know whether to maybe pair them in the future and see if they're able to produce anything, or are they just going to be here and hanging out and enjoying what the remainder of their life, or do I maybe take a chance and see if anyone's interested in working with a particular bloodline? But, you know, with older animals, I think sometimes it's just a death sentence to send them out somewhere, unless it's that's kind of how I feel about that. I don't know, Bill, if you have any opinions about that, but that's pretty much what my recap for this year and maybe what's going to happen next year.
I didn't know you had three clutches on the ground. That's awesome. I had no idea.
Yeah. Yep. So
well, that's
but they're all from the same male.
Yeah, that's insane, from the same male.
Right, and I can't remember who it was, but someone got a hold of me and was sent me a direct message and had just asked, what's the most successful pairings you've done with a male? And up until this year, it had been two in one season. And But I think Christian Stewart has done, I think Blue Deuce, the Ron Jeremy of the Condro world, I think he may have done like 3 or 4 one year. I can't remember. But there was years where he was just on it in multiple clutches year after year.
I've had him. Jaeger has done 3, but the last clutch that he sired, although there were some slugs in the clutch, it was a big clutch, but all the eggs eventually ended up going bad in his the third clutch that he sired in one particular year. So it was probably him. He was probably his sperm were probably spent.
Right.
But I think Patrick has told me that he's had a male that's done at least 3 clutches in one year as well.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if male, I mean, they're not mammals, so I don't know the answer to this question, but, you know, do males lose fertility in reptiles like mammals do eventually, or reduce sperm count, or those type of things?
Yeah.
I've often wondered if we know females seem to have a limited reproductive lifespan, but what about males?
Yeah, I have no idea. I can only assume as they get older, like everything else, then their capabilities diminish. You know, they've got a. I'm sure they have a prime of their breeding. You know, so.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking when I did the same male with 3 females this year. I'm also thinking I want to keep these genetics. Maybe I can, you know, have another animal or 2 look similar. That way, you know, something happens to this male, I don't have any regrets that I didn't breed the heck out of them first.
Absolutely. Well, when you have a male that's just so phenotypically awesome looking, you know, your mind just starts racing, you know, especially with different females. Like, God, I wonder what the babies would look like from this female or that female.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, we had talked about, Buddy, that, you know, we wanted to keep a pretty strict 90-minute cutoff time on our episode tonight, and we're approaching that as crazy as that sounds. We've got about 15 minutes left. But I did want to talk about what sense that you got, you know, almost every podcast I'm on, and a lot of them are ball python-centric, is the market, you know, the reptile market, the ball python market, the green tree python market. Do you have any sense of, because I know you're not in ball pythons, what is your sense of how the reptile market is moving now compared to maybe a year ago, you know, compared to COVID? What are your thoughts on, like, the green tree market?
For me personally, I haven't really noticed a slowdown, and I still get regular communications about available animals. Do I, you know, what do I have? Is anything available that's not listed in a particular place? So that's me personally. I do know that, since last year, I decided so in 2022, I had a pretty good year with condors, but I didn't sell any. I just held them back until they were like a year and a half. And I put last May or June, I put probably like 10 condors up for sale.
Yeah.
And I would say 8 out of the 10 were sold in 3 days.
Yeah.
And then the remainder were gone within 2 weeks. And then I put a second batch up.
Are you posting these on Morph Market? Is that where you're posting them?
Yeah, Morph Market. Yep. And then I did, had some other animals that they went through the color change, and I was like, okay, it's a good looking animal, but I don't really necessarily need to keep it. I have something that looks better, or, you know, or I already have something that looks similar or similar genetics. So I put some other animals up, and those animals, they sold as well. But I did notice that the particularly yellow neonates, which I thought I had priced pretty fairly, kind of sat there for a little bit, but they're gone now too. So okay. I think it's just, I have the mindset that, when I put an animal for sale, that it's going to be for sale for a while. That, you know, I don't have expectations that, that, you know, they're going to sell quickly, and usually they're going to sit. I'm okay if they sit there for a month. And sure. That's okay. But I mean, honestly, last spring and summer, when I put those animals up, like the quickness that they sold, I think there was a couple of things going on there. I then, you know, I think you and I had talked about pricing too at some point. But I think that I was looking at, when I looked at what other people had available that was similar, I was easily third or half the price of what everybody else is asking for their animals. So that's why mine, I think, went quickly. I think I had undervalued them. And so people were jumping on that.
Gotcha.
And so then that's, you know, part of my ignorance, not really looking to see, you know, what the current market is for certain animals. And, but, you know, I have diamond pythons, and same thing. Like, I don't expect them to sell at a quick pace, but I'm regularly selling diamond pythons. For me personally, I haven't really noticed a slowdown, but take this into consideration. I vended a show back in March with Tim Morris and a couple other the old Condro guys like us, Bill. And, of course, I was the only person there with diamond python. And I was one of two people that actually had captive bred green tree pythons. But 90% of the show was crested geckos and or ball pythons.
Sure.
And, you know, when I walk around, I look at it, I'm like, you know, I see these ball pythons, and I don't know, you know, this is not an area that I will pretend to have any knowledge of. But when I look at the animals, they all look very similar to me. There are a couple of animals that are like standouts, like, wow, that's a really different looking animal. And it's priced like it's a very different animal. But then there's a lot of animals that look very similar. And I guess unless maybe you're a connoisseur, you wouldn't really be able to know that this is this animal is expressing this gene and this animal is expressing another gene. But from my standpoint, as someone who's not a connoisseur, they kind of all look similar to me, and they all are kind of priced in the same price range. And there's a lot of them. And I think that could be, if you're talking about ball pythons, maybe that could be a point where there's market saturation, and with not a lot of variation with, you know, outward appearances and, you know, and price.
Yeah, you're probably getting a very skewed perspective. You know, I don't know how big the show was that you were vending at.
No, I'm not terrible.
What's that?
No, it's not a terribly big show.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if probably you went to a big, you know, if you did the same kind of comparison at Tinley or some of the other NARBC shows, you'd probably see a lot of different variety in ball pythons. You'd certainly see a huge variety in pricing, I mean, all over the board. And now a lot of the sales are in, you know, a lot of these triple and now even quadruple hets, you know, animals that may show two visual characteristics but carry two more recessive genes, you know, so, you know, you probably, those animals can still be, depending what recessive genes they're carrying and what they're representing visually, you know, can hold a pretty high price point. But I was just going to get your kind of feel on green trees and the other stuff that you tried to sell recently, the diamonds. I'm not surprised by your response at all. You mentioned Morph Market, so I just quickly got on Morph Market. There's 37,112 ball pythons available on Morph Market. There are 65 green trees. 65 green trees, and that's including the wild caught in the green trees. I think there's 12 captive bred green trees available on Morph Market right now.
How many diamond pythons?
I didn't look at diamond pythons. Probably less than 12.
And I'm on Morph Market, and I didn't even know you could do that.
Yeah, all you got to do is go on Morph Market and then just go on categories. They have the very first page up is categories, and all you got to do is click ball python, green tree python, carpet, diamond, rainbow boas. And as soon as you click on it, it tells you how many are available.
Well, I learned something new tonight, Bill. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'm happy to...
37,000 ball pythons on Morph Market. So how many do you think are truly available? And like people that are like local breeders that don't use Morph Market or...
Yeah, I mean, there's no telling. Well, the good news is for ball python people is that number is actually down from in excess of 50,000 ball pythons listed on Morph Market. I looked up probably about a year ago. I did the exact same thing.
Wow.
Python categories, there's 50,000 available. So things are looking up. Things are looking up.
Okay. Buddy,
in 22 years, this is the first year I didn't pair a single ball python.
Really?
Really. I usually produce...
And you didn't do it because, for what reason?
Several different reasons, that being a big one, market saturation. I had animals left over from last year that I could still sell. And the fact that, you know, the last 3 years of green tree production has been steady and significant and time-consuming, and that's where my passion is. And so everything else comes after, secondary to the green trees.
Sure.
And, you know, cranking out, producing 60 babies last year, that's all I wanted. I didn't want carpet python babies. I didn't want ball python babies. I didn't want Borneo short tail babies. I didn't want rough scale babies. So I didn't breed any of it. Just the chondros.
I feel like I'm out of touch. So what do you think? So tell me about like what is your take on the market? Do you think that
I think it's a collapse or recovering?
Okay.
It was certainly a collapse a year ago, coming out of post-COVID where anything would sell. It didn't matter what you had. You breed it, you produce it, and you were going to sell it. That's the way the COVID years, you know, COVID and COVID plus 1 year was. And, you know, with the stimulus money and nobody having anything better than to buy snakes, you know, they just, everything sold like crazy. And, and then it, you know, with the economy and inflation, it took a big, you know, beating, but now I think it's starting to come back. And again, I'm talking about green trees. I mean, really, their economy recession-proof, or whatever you want to call it. The demand is much higher than the supply, especially captive-bred stuff from reputable sources.
Right.
So that, like you, I felt absolutely no dip. If anything, the opposite. If anything, prices went up. Because more people are interested, more people have been informed, more people are knowledgeable. And I think, you know, not to pat ourselves on the back, but I think we had at least a little bit to do with that. You know, our mission has somewhat been fulfilled a decade ago, wanting to dispel myths about green tree pythons, that they're not impossible to keep and they're not all going to bite your face off. So I think they've become even more popular in recent history. So I don't think they're not going anywhere except up in demand.
Yeah. Yep. And I wonder, now that Bushmaster, the company, is gone now, correct? Cameron has retired?
I don't know that the Bushmaster is gone. All I know is the imports coming out of New Guinea and Indo they're significantly less than they were 5 years ago, say.
Yep. Well, makes for an interesting situation for us to be in.
Yeah. No, I think for people that are producing green trees, we're in a good position. So keep at it. Keep going strong.
Maybe I know what I'll do with my free time in a couple of years.
All right, my friend, our 90-minute window is coming to an end. I'm glad we did the episode.
All right, yep.
And the future is to be determined.
Yes. So people just have to pay attention. Like, it's going to be, an unsudden event suddenly just springs up on you. Could be another show and, 4 months, four years.
That's how this one was. You just announced
it,
just like what, today or yesterday?
Right.
So, yep, I think you're right. Absolutely. Just be on guard.
Right. You never know when you're going to have to tune in on a Sunday night.
Cancel all your plans.
That's right. Just be ready.
All right. Well,
all right,
it was great
Bill.
Catching up, friend.
Likewise. You take care, and we will talk soon.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks for tuning in tonight.
Yep. Everyone, thank you so much. And pay attention. Something could spring up. Just like that.
Good night.